Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we welcome back Holly Harris, who is the Executive Director for the U.S. Justice Action Network and its sister organization, Fix Forfeiture. We're going to talk about the subject of justice reform and the criminal justice system in this country, especially in the wake of the tragic shootings recently in America, for example, Louisiana, Minnesota, and also in Dallas. Holly, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me and for talking about a really significant topic during a turbulent time.
Sure. Any way you look at it, Holly, obviously there's a racial component to the whole story.
There is. You know, of course, our justice system has a lot of racial disparities that are very disturbing. But I think what we're seeing now with our justice system, you know, when one in three American adults has a criminal record, you know, this problem is impacting every single American family. And while a lot of these justice reforms aren't going to solve some of the problems that we're seeing today with these terrible, horrific shootings, they do offer an opportunity for us to come together. You know, individuals of all political stripes, and blacks, white men, women, young, old, agree that it's time for us to move forward to fix our broken criminal justice system. And I really think we're at a moment in time in this country when we really need to unify. And this is the one area, the one issue on which many Republicans and Democrats agree.
Okay, what do you mean specifically?
Well, you know, for example, what we're seeing on the Hill in Washington, D.C. with Congress, you know, when you've got Senator Lee agreeing with Senator Durbin, you know, Senator Grassley agreeing with Senator Leahy. I mean, you're talking about individuals that are incredibly different. Senator Booker, you know, doing panels with Senator Lee, your most progressive and your most conservative leaders in this country, you know, took to the floor of the United States Senate yesterday and just pled with their fellow members to move forward on these justice reforms that would safely reduce the federal prison population and astronomical associated cost to taxpayers, and would address the exploding recidivism rate that we see in this country, the revolving door of incarceration. And so, you know, it's our hope that, again, despite turbulent times, that we can still reach across the aisle, hold hands, and improve our country and improve our justice system.
Okay, can you be specific? What are you talking about with justice reforms? It sounds like maybe you understand what that is, but I would assume the average viewer or reader, or listener rather, has no clue what you're talking about. So
exactly,
if you would.
So this dates back to, in 1994, then President Clinton, you know, in response to the war on drugs, signed into law the 1994 Tough on Crime Bill. And what that did was it implemented these really harsh mandatory minimum sentences, even for low-level nonviolent drug offenders. And that contributed to the exploding prison population that we now see at the federal level. But what's worse, that piece of legislation incentivized states to enact similar tough-on-crime mandatory minimum sentences and to build more prisons. So now what we have in this country is we have 2.2 million people behind bars. We spend $80 billion a year on corrections, and we're not getting the public safety return that we deserve. So the reforms that we work on would eliminate or significantly reduce the extremely harsh mandatory minimum sentences for your low-level nonviolent offenders, because many of those offenders would actually be better off and have better outcomes in alternatives to incarceration, like treatment programs or mental health programs. You know, a lot of these people are addicts or they have mental health problems. So, of course, those issues don't get solved if these people are just sitting behind bars and don't have access to treatment. So what happens is when these individuals get out of prison, they're better criminals than they are than better citizens, which is certainly should not, you know, be the goal of incarcerating these individuals. They get out, they recommit crime, they go back to prison, and that's the cycle of failure that we seek to break with these reforms that would improve treatment and rehabilitation programs, eliminate or reduce these unduly harsh and unnecessary mandatory minimum sentences. And, you know, and we also work on efforts to comprehensively shrink our exploding criminal codes. And then, of course, you know, improve reentry programming so we can break down barriers for the formerly incarcerated so they can find jobs, support their families, and lead crime-free lives.
Okay, sorry, are you saying it's all Bill Clinton's fault? I mean, I'm just curious.
No, it's certainly not all Bill Clinton's fault. And in fact, at the time, you know, both Republicans and Democrats were very supportive of the tough on crime bill. But, you know, no one could have guessed, you know, how these reforms or how at the time they thought these were reforms, but no one could have guessed, you know, the consequences to that particular piece of legislation. In fact, at the time, we were all applauding it. But what we now know is we went too far. You know, when one in three Americans in this country has a criminal record, you know, we've got a real problem. You know, America holds 5% of the world's population, but has 25% of its prisoners. And I don't think it's because we're more evil than the rest of the world. I just think we need to address, you know, some of these, you know, laws that were put into place for good reasons at the time, but we now know they're not giving us the public safety return that we deserve. And I'll share a piece of data with you.
Sure.
that will tell you where the states are headed with this. You know, the states have really been moving. You mentioned this at the beginning of our discussion. The states have been forging ahead with reforms. And over the past decade, the 10 states that have most significantly reduced their prison populations through the reforms I'm talking about saw roughly a 13% drop in their crime rate. Conversely, the 10 states that most significantly increased their prison populations only saw about an 8% drop in their crime rate. So we now know that not only do these reforms make our system fairer and save significant and valuable taxpayer dollars, they also make us safer, and that should be the goal of any good justice system.
Okay, now, meanwhile, as far as you know, the actual events that caused this recent violence, you had situations where, for example, the policeman, as one law officer put it, very well put, I thought, he said, there's nobody who hates a bad cop worse than a good cop. I mean, there were situations where apparently some policemen did the wrong thing, and it would be very easy to just surmise it was a racist component. In other words, a white police officer used more force than necessary to subdue a black person, and in some cases killed them.
Yeah, you know, look, I think there's no question there is a real lack of trust between, in many areas of this country, between law enforcement and members of the African American community. I mean, no one will argue that. You know, all of these circumstances are tragic, not just, you know, the shootings of these, you know, these black men, but also the shootings of these courageous, you know, law enforcement officers in Dallas. It's all tragic. And certainly I never want to, you know, characterize these reforms that we work on, you know, as the answer to all of our problems. What they can do, though, is help rebuild trust, help offer some hope to a lot of these individuals in these disadvantaged communities. They can help make our system fair, which I think will go a long way in rebuilding trust and unifying our country.
All right, we're talking right now with Holly Harris, Executive Director for the U.S. Justice Action Network. Is there a website you want to refer people to?
Yes, sir, justiceactionnetwork.org. If you'll go to our website, you can see a lot of the state work that we do and certainly the work we're trying to do at the federal level. And we're going to be doing a lot of work at both the Republican National Convention and the Democrat National Convention coming up here shortly.
Okay, now, there's 2.2 million people at any given point in America incarcerated. You said that earlier, right?
That's correct.
If these reforms went through, you know, without a hitch or whatever, what would that number hopefully drop to in your, you know, goals or estimation?
Well, what we do know is, I mean, it would be tough to say because obviously a lot of these reforms are moving in individual states. And then, of course, we have the legislation at the federal level, which would impact the roughly 197,000 individuals that are incarcerated at the federal level. But what I can tell you is that individual states, you know, that have moved these reforms forward, most significantly in Texas. Texas was actually the first state, oddly enough, because Texas is thought of as the tough on crime state. But in 2007, you know, Texas was faced with either adding 15,000 new prison beds or implementing these reforms that would eliminate the need for those beds. And Texas chose to do the latter. They saved roughly $2 billion and, again, eliminated the need for the 15,000 new beds. And now Texas has its lowest crime rate since 1968. So, you know, depending on the reforms that you implement, and there's no one size fits all, a lot of these states are, you know, moving forward with reentry programming that can, you know, ensure a lot of these people don't recommit crime and go back to prison when they get out, which, of course, impacts your prison population and your crime rates. And others are moving forward with sentencing reforms that, you know, ensure that individuals aren't sitting behind bars longer than they should be and that they're getting the treatment and rehabilitation programming that they deserve. You know, others are getting a lot of these ridiculous criminal laws off the books that criminalize behavior that shouldn't be criminalized to begin with. Michigan did a lot of that over the course of the last year.
For example. What do you mean? Wait, Holly. For example, what do you just give a specific example of something that people are being punished for that prison is not the best way to punish them for it?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you a terrible example of something that happened at the federal level. There was an individual who was charged with a crime for packaging lobsters in plastic containers rather than cardboard containers. And you know, in a lot of these circumstances,
this guy didn't go to prison for that. I hope
was charged with and convicted of a felony. Absolutely. There was another instance of an individual who diverted some sewage from a retirement home, and that sewage went into a stream that ultimately ended up in the Potomac. And that individual then was charged with a felony crime and had to plead to a felony. So, and you know, in Michigan, a lot of the laws that they decriminalized were just ridiculous things. I mean, stuff like, you know, similar to like, you know, throwing an ice cream cone on the side of the road. You know, unfortunately, what's happened throughout the last couple of decades is that lawmakers think, well, you know, they'll take one individual circumstance and then they'll just decide, well, we should enact this law, and guess what? We should make it a felony. And what's now happened is we've exploded our justice system, and we haven't looked at these laws together and comprehensively. And fortunately, states like Ohio, Kentucky, Illinois, you know, those states right now have task forces that are actually taking a comprehensive look at their criminal codes to say, hey, you know, some of this stuff shouldn't be criminal at all. Others should maybe even have enhancements, you know. But some of this behavior shouldn't be criminal at all. We shouldn't be involving these people in the justice system. We shouldn't be impacting their ability to get a job and support their families. And so, you know, these states are moving forward with those types of reforms, and hopefully, you know, it will have a significant impact, you know, on their justice system and the burden that's on taxpayers right now.
I can't help but think, by the way, as you're saying all these things, there's a classic quote from G.K. Chesterton from about 100 years ago from England, where, you know, it was a great Christian thinker. He said something like this: if men won't be governed by the Ten Commandments, then they'll be governed by the 10,000 commandments. So it's so true.
No question. And I want to tell you, too, there's a
yeah, with this, we'll close. Go ahead.
Called Crime a Day.
Crime a Day?
Yeah, Crime a Day. At Crime a Day, that literally tweets out a crime a day that is absolutely ridiculous. And it can tell you a lot about how we've overcriminalized our country.
At Crime a Day. Okay, and again, people can get more information at justiceactionnetwork.org. Thank you so much for being with us. Holly Harris, Executive Director of the U.S. Justice Action Network. All the best to you.
Thanks so much. Y'all stay safe.
Okay, bye-bye.